Hello, I'm Jim Connell, and this is number 0363, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0363. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor-musician Robbie Rist, who has done the music for Sharknado. The fourth film, Sharknado 4, The Fourth Awakens, is just out.
Really, the deal is that Anthony C. Ferrante, the director, I've been playing music on his projects since he was in his 20s. And so this is just a continuation of this, 20-year relationship we've had. And so he keeps calling me, and he's like, oh, I want to, because I think his approach to filmmaking is sort of similar to John Carpenter, where, John Carpenter, is a low-budget guy, so he's like, I can't always afford someone to score it, so oh, the hell with it, I'm doing it.
Aneros Valencia is a former TWA stewardess. She talks about the glory days of flying when even the uniforms were elegant.
I enjoyed looking elegant. The suits, they only wore skirts, no pants. A very light colored pantyhose, and we all had to wear 2.5-inch black pumps, and this was a pencil skirt, and the jacket was slightly tailored. I just felt absolutely beautiful. It looked beautiful.
Michelle Rialli from the pharmaceutical company Astellas on a current contest they're offering.
What we're looking for are Canadians, and actually, we're looking for entries globally to participate in a challenge which will help make the lives of cancer patients a little bit easier. So we're looking at innovative and creative ideas from people, to help those suffering from cancer.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, plus an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0363, was Jim Connell, a freelance broadcaster right here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Jim, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We've all received those emails that tell us a fortune in found money is waiting for you in some far-flung bank in a foreign country, and it's just waiting for your ripe pickings. It never ceases to amaze me how many of these things still come in nowadays, which leads me to believe that there are still many gullible people out there. Now, recently I received an email from South Africa that actually included a phone number. The email said, "Hello, I am Mr. Naranja Fernando, the director and coordinator of Finance and Contact Department of the Minerals and Energy with South African Government." The crux of the letter is that the finance contract department of the DME deliberately overinflated the contract values of various contracts, blah, 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 on and on and on it goes. You get the gist. As I mentioned, there was a phone number, so I thought I would give them a call. I wasn't going to give my real name, but I did say I was Jonas Grumby, working on behalf of my client, Eunice Wentworth. Now, true fans of Gilligan's Island will note that Jonas Grumby is the full name of the skipper, and Eunice Wentworth is the middle and maiden name of Lovey Howell. I didn't get very far with the call, but I'll let you enjoy what's there.
Hello?
Yes, hello. May I speak to Mr. Fernando, please?
Yes, pick in.
I'm calling on behalf of a client of mine. My name is Jonas Grumby, and I received, my client rather, received an email about a finance and contract department of the Mineral and Energy of South African Government. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, if I may ask first, please, who is your client?
I'm not at liberty to say right now. She's a very private woman, and she wanted me to check into this before going any further.
But it's very difficult for me to reveal any information to you if I don't know who you're talking about.
Well, I am her official representative, so most of the information will be going through me. And again, I'm Jonas Grumby.
Yes, I know you are, but I never contacted you. And if you are speaking on behalf of your client, at least I have the right to know your client.
My client, her name is Eunice Wentworth.
Who?
Eunice Wentworth.
Okay. Can she please? I cannot give you details on phone. All I need to do, because the business which I have proposed, also with my position, I cannot just reveal information to you just like that. I would like your client to give you authority to speak with me by email.
Okay. Is there anything you can tell me right now about your business?
Only what I can tell you is, after I've confirmed that your client, who is my partner, that I proposed to, give me authority to speak with you by sending me an email that you have instructed so-and-so person to speak with me.
Okay. I will try and get her to send you that email as soon as possible. Can you tell me what email address I should send it to?
She has my email address.
Okay. I will make sure that she sends you an email.
No problem. Once you do that they have given me authority. I'm sorry about this, but also I need to be sure and protect my own side like she is doing. I would not want just to give out information without receiving an authority, power of attorney given to you to speak to me.
Okay. I'll make sure that's
done.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye.
No problem. You're welcome.
So, I won't be calling back, nor will I be sending an email, but for me, it was a fun few moments. By the way, I've turned this into a video slideshow that you can see on the Stuff File fan page on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thestufffileprogram, and you'll find it there. Also, as we often say on this program, everything seems to happen these days at Walmart. Here's the latest incident. Police are seeking information about an Arizona man who carried out a robbery in a local Walmart on an electric scooter. Pima County Sheriff's Department shared surveillance video of the scooter-bound thief as he reportedly placed items in the basket of the scooter and tried to leave the Tucson store without paying. The footage shows a female Walmart employee approach the man as he attempts to dodge on the scooter before driving it into the employee and pinning her against the wall. Two customers help the employee free herself from between the wall and the scooter, but the man can be seen driving the vehicle through the store's exit and reportedly evading capture by heading west. Police describe the man as a Caucasian male with brown hair and a mustache in his late 40s or early 50s and was seen carrying crutches. In addition to the July 3rd incident caught on film, police say the man was also wanted in connection with a July 2nd robbery attempt at the same store. Well, what that tells me is he'll be back. And I'm sure the police and Walmart will be waiting. In the meantime, I have also put the link to the video up on the Stuff File fan page on Facebook, so you can go and see it there in all its Technicolor glory. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File news, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, how much do black market prosthetic toddler legs go for? I asked that question because of this next story. The family members of a little boy in California issued a plea asking for heartless thieves to return a stolen prosthetic leg. Amanda McFarland and Frank Brennis took their family to the Crystal Cove State Beach. Their son, Liam, who was 4, was born without the fibula bone and had his leg amputated when he was just a year old. He was fitted with a prosthetic leg. On Sunday, Liam was at the beach for the first time in his life. He went into the water with an old prosthetic leg, but when he returned, he found that thieves had taken all the stuff, including his prosthetic leg. Liam's parents looked in all the dumpsters for the leg, but they couldn't find it. They then issued a public appeal and urged the thieves to return the child's leg. Police launched an investigation, but so far, no arrests have been made. Well, whomever took it is a real heel, and they have no soul. Just saying. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor-musician Robbie Rist is back on the show. The last time we spoke to him, he was driving a school bus in the first installment of Sharknado. Well, that phenomenon is back this summer with its fourth installment entitled Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens. And this time around, he's involved musically. Robbie joins us on the line via Skype from California. Hi, Robbie.
Hello, sir, and thank you for having me on again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Lovely.
So you're involved, as I said, musically in this movie. I know you're a musician. You do a lot of music, and you score a lot of music, and you've done it. Didn't you do some of it in the first Sharknado as well?
I did. I've done music in all of them, actually.
Okay.
Because, I mean, really the deal is that Anthony C. Ferrante, the director, and I have been I've been playing music on his projects since he was in his 20s. And so this is just a continuation of this, I don't know, 20-year relationship we've had. And so he keeps calling me and he's like, oh, I want to, you know, because I think his approach to filmmaking is sort of similar to John Carpenter, where, you know, John Carpenter like is a low budget guy. So he's like, I can't always afford someone to score it. So, oh, the hell with it. I'm doing it. So he gets me involved, to sort of pad out the pop songs that they have in these things. And we're on number four now. And the theme song, Ballad of Sharknado, whatever that word means anymore, it's kind of a bona fide hit.
That's great. Now, one of the things about scoring a movie is you're like one of the actors in this. You actually help to set the tone and the mood, right?
I do, like I said, for the Sharknado movies, it's mostly pop song stuff. But yeah, definitely for doing scoring, I mean, your job is, because I scored the music, I did an independent horror film in 2006 called Stump the Band. And again, we had no money, so I ended up being the scoring guy. And, you know, Bill Holmes, the director, you know, came to me and said, that we want scary here, you know. So you have to... The weird thing about music is I think music is really evidence of magic in the universe, because music comes literally from nothing. I mean, you know, you have to draw a picture. You have to type a book. Basically, for music, you just go blah, 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 and there you are.
Right. Now,
you know, yeah.
For those who didn't see the first Sharknado, spoiler alert, as I mentioned, you were in that one as a school bus driver who met a very interesting demise. So does that mean that there is no cameo for you anymore in these?
Okay, so in the first film, I think in any of these movies, I might be the only character that's never been killed by sharks. In the first movie, as it turns out, in his backstory, the school bus driver that Ian Ziering comes to rescue along with all of the kids came to Los Angeles to be an actor. And before his ultimate demise, the last thing he says is, my mom always told me that Hollywood would kill me, as the H from the Hollywood sign crushes him. So it's pretty great. I have a podcast of my own on tmvcafe.com called The Spoon. And on one of the hosts of The Spoon is really lobbying for a zombie shark hunting me, maybe for the next movie.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about how you're keeping busy, because we mentioned Sharknado. You just mentioned you have a podcast called The Spoon. Tell us about that.
Yes. Okay. The Spoon, we've been on for about 4 or 5 years now. We hope. How about this? What we describe it as, we hope it is, which is sort of a comedic talk show about nothing. And we have, we have guests primarily just to sort of break up the rhythm of the three guys, because we've known each other for so long. And, once you get us talking, we're just like, brrr. So we have, different people that are sometimes, super successful, sometimes just plain old civilians, just somebody who's game to doing it. And it's on every Wednesday at 7. I just wrapped up season 4 of Doc McStuffins, which is, we're hoping, going to go into season 5. Hashtag Doc McStuffins season 5, everybody. Hashtag that baby. Let's see, what else? So we're hoping to go for a season 5 there. I'm on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon as Mondo Gecko at this point. And then in conjunction with Sharknado 4, Anthony C. Ferrante and myself, we have we call our band Quint, named after the Robert Shaw character in Jaws. And so we also have an EP of songs that's out on iTunes and Amazon called Sharknado Rhapsody. It just got released today. So we have that batch of songs out there. I have my own group, Ballsy Tomorrow. We're just about to start releasing a batch of singles. I'm just, somebody told me a long time ago, don't specialize, just work. And I went, okay.
And you've been busy since you were a kid. I don't think I've ever asked you this particular question, because every once in a while, someone will make a Cousin Oliver reference. to your role in the Brady Bunch. And often when they do it, sadly, it's the butt of a joke. You've had such staying power as Cousin Oliver, but does it bother you that people joke about the character?
No, no. Are you kidding me? Somebody's talking. In the world that we live in now, if anybody is paying any attention to anything you ever did, you're winning. So I think it's hilarious. And it has nothing to do with me anymore. You know what I mean? It's just this character took on a life of its own, and now it exists in a whole other universe that has nothing to do with me at all. But they're still talking about it, and I was involved. And how cool is it that I keep getting lucky enough to stumble into these weird jobs where decades later people are still talking about them?
It does say something about the type of entertainment we knew growing up as kids and into the 70s and 80s that has that staying power long before the networks started to fragment into hundreds of networks instead of back then just simply three.
Right, right. Well, also, though, think about how many shows have been on the air since, say, the Brady Bunch went off, 74 or whatever. You know, usually there's, 100 shows a year or something that get made, maybe more, and now it's even more than that. And most of that stuff completely disappears. No one's talking about it. You know, when was the last time somebody brought up, Apple's Way?
I was going to bring up My Mother the Car, but...
Okay, well, that's another one, but, But the thing is, all of these shows have come and gone, and for some reason, there's that, there's the turtle thing, there's the Sharknado thing. For some strange reason, I keep running into these things that people keep talking about. And so I'm trying to promote myself as, if you want your thing to hit some sort of iconhood, put me in it. I really don't know if that's true.
You're the pop culture good luck charm.
Maybe so. So apparently the stuff file is just going to be like in the next 5 years or so, you're going to be like, that was brilliant. They're going to make you like prime minister. It's going to be great.
From your lips to God's ears. Really? I want people to know where they can find, first of all, the music for Sharknado. People can actually buy it, right?
That's right. It's on Amazon and it's on iTunes. The record's called Sharknado Rhapsody. And also, actually, the music from all the movies up until now, they put out Lakeshore Records put out a Sharknado 3 sound or songs inspired by Sharknado 3, and we have some stuff on that. The other Quint EPs are all up on iTunes also from all of the other movies. Plus, I got... just do a search for me. I have tons of stuff out there, and I don't even know where it all is.
What about a website? Is there a Robbie Rist website?
Not yet. We're working on that. That's heading, because I'm 52. What do I know about the internet? So that's getting up there. Primarily find me on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. So I'm really available and really easy to find.
Really, right now out there, there's a woman clutching her chest hearing that Cousin Oliver is 52.
Well, gosh, I'm not sure if I can say this on the show, but I hope she's clutching a chest I would like.
There you go.
And I'm like, by the way, lady out there, if you're clutching your chest, let's take a shot. Find me. We'll see what happens.
The Spoon. Where can people find that?
www.tmvcafe.com that has a show on there. I also produce a country music show, a country music and Americana show with a local impresario guy named Ronnie Mack. So I do his radio show also on TMV. And Tom Bowers, who's a co-host of The Spoon, also has a show called The Super Enthusiast Radio. So that's all under the umbrella of this. I think I'm starting a production company. I can't really tell yet.
Great. Well, Robbie, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Peter, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Continued success in everything you do.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. You too. Good heavens. Let's go on. Let's. You got a prime minister gig to get.
Wow. A life in politics. I don't think I'm ready for that. Anyway, actor and musician Robbie Rist. Again, you can check out the music from Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens. You can also check out the podcast, The Spoon. You'll find it at thespoonradio.com. And you can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0363, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Inform or entertain? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about being a stewardess in the heyday of flight. Plus, we'll discuss a new prize that is put out by Astellas, that's a pharmaceutical company, and they're looking for ways to make life easier for cancer patients. More on that a little later on. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, and lots more stuff right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A Florida man arrested when police found suspected crystal meth on his floorboard was cleared last week, or weeks later, I should say, when the substance was revealed as donut glaze. The police report of the incident in Orlando says an officer staking out a 7-Eleven store for suspected drug activity pulled over 64-year-old Daniel Rushing after he left the store for failing to make a complete stop before pulling out of the parking lot and driving 42 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone. Corporal Shelby Riggs Hopkins, an 8-year veteran of the department, wrote that she asked Rushing to exit his vehicle when she noticed a concealed carry permit in his wallet, and he confirmed that he had indeed a gun with him. The officer took note of a rock-like substance on the floorboard where his feet were. I recognized, through my 11 years of training and experience as a law enforcement officer, the substance to be some sort of narcotic, she wrote. Rushing consented to a search of his car, and officers found 3 more pieces of the suspicious substance, which the driver identified to police as glaze from a Krispy Kreme donut. I kept telling them, "That's glaze from a donut." They tried to say it was crack cocaine at first. Then they said, "No, it's meth, crystal meth," Rushing reported. The police report confirms Rushing told the officers it was donut glaze. Officers conducted 2 roadside tests that came back positive for illegal substances and then proceeded to take Rushing to the county jail on a methamphetamine possession charge, where they strip-searched him and, after about 10 hours, released him on $2,500 bail. The charges were dropped several weeks later when a Florida Department of Law Enforcement crime lab confirmed Rushing had been telling officers the truth. Rushing has hired an attorney, surprise, surprise, William Ruffier, to seek damages from the city. "I just don't want this to happen to anyone else," Rushing says. "I got arrested for no reason at all." Okay, this is classic proof that not every police officer knows about drugs. And contrary to common folklore, not every police officer knows about donuts.
an activist group, has a reminder for Bosnian Pokemon Go players. Your country has real mines in it, lots of them. Posavina Without Mines says people playing the augmented reality smartphone game have wandered into minefields. Accidents involving Bosnia's mines, which go back to the war that ended in 1995, have killed 600 people. Well, this is like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon come to life, isn't it? And a future source of many a Darwin file story. You just wait and see. Meanwhile, Davis Wallman noticed some lights on when he arrived at his Green Lake, Washington home. I don't immediately freak out about things like this. This was not ordinary, though, he said. Wallman also found a screen from a bathroom window in his tub. Now, that night, he heard strange noises in the attic. Jolted out of bed, he noticed a light on in his office, which was locked. So he knocked on the door. Jimmy? Is that you, Jimmy? A woman's voice said. I'm like, no, it's not Jimmy, Wallman said. Who is this, and why are you in my house? The woman opened the door, and I'm like, who are you, and why are you in my house? Wallman asked her. And she just keeps kind of going on saying, this is my house. I live here. I've been here for 3 days. Jimmy said I could live here. Jimmy said I could stay here. Wallman called the police, but the unknown woman got away before they arrived. Wallman changed the locks in his house and is puzzled how the woman got in. Well, easy. She jimmied the locks. Yeah, I know it's bad, but there you go. Anyway, one more item in the Stuff File news before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. How hot is it these days in upstate New York? Well, so hot that horse manure is bursting into flames. The State Department of Environmental Conservation says it received multiple complaints July 5th about the smell and smoke emanating from a burning pile of horse manure at a property in the town of Throop in the Finger Lakes region 20 miles west of Syracuse. The responding officer learned that the owners of the horse stable had been storing the manure in large piles that frequently spontaneously combusted in the excessive heat and dry conditions. DEC officials say a shift in the prevailing winds carried the odor of burning manure into the neighbors' windows. It took three local fire departments 2 hours to douse the burning manure. Which brings me to a point I've been curious about for quite some time now. I often take drives through the countryside because it's a great pastime. Plus, I like to get landscape photographs, as you can see on my Flickr page. Anyway, if you've ever traveled through farm country, you can often get a whiff of the various animal deposits. Yet, when you pass farmhouses, you often see their laundry hanging on the line, including bed linen. That doesn't strike me as the clean aroma that I want lingering on my pillowcases at night. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in the 1960s, when Trans World Airlines took people up, up, and away, air travel was more glamorous than it is today. So, too, were the stewardesses who made travelers feel at home. Former TWA stewardess Aneros Valenci was a German native who came to America and worked in the skies. She is also the author of the upcoming book, America the Beautiful, Through the Eyes of an Immigrant. She joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Aneros.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. As I said in the introduction, it certainly was a much more glamorous way to travel back in the day. First of all, how did you become a stewardess?
Well, I was in a traveling mood, and I wanted to see what's happening in the world. And at the time, I lived in London, England, and there I was hired by Transworld Airline to come to Kansas City for training. And in 1966, I arrived here, and the training was a little difficult because you had to learn all the planes, interiors and outsides and everything. You had to know how the slides work, you know, the emergency slides, whatever, the whole thing. And the service was very, very complicated, especially in first class. But if you're practical like I am, it was no problem.
Now, as you say, you were in London when you first decided to become a flight attendant. Was TWA or an American airline in general, were these your first choices? Or did you look at some of the European airlines like then BOAC or some of the others?
No, I did not, because I wanted to go to America, and I needed to, everything I wanted to do in another country, I had to look first, what can I do so I'm able to get a job to work and maybe have a roof over my head? I had to support myself. And if TWA would accept me, I would, you know, have a roof over my head, per se, have a promised job if I get through the training, and I wouldn't have to worry about it. And so they hired me, and I was very happy because I couldn't have just come to America. First of all, it was very different. You couldn't just come. You had to come, and if you visited even, you needed a visa from someone in Europe. You needed a round-trip ticket to come, and you had only, I think, but 3 months, and of course, otherwise you were illegal. So all this worked fine for me, and when I came, and I was accepted, so I went through training, and then I was on an international run. So I still had the chance to go back to Europe and visit family and friends and back and forth, and I felt glamorous.
Besides the travel, what was the best part about being a stewardess back in those days?
I enjoyed looking elegant. The suits, we only wore skirts, no pants, very light colored pantyhose, and we all had to wear 2.5-inch black pumps, and this was a pencil skirt, and the jacket was slightly tailored, and the hat, I just felt absolutely beautiful. It looked beautiful.
Were there some downsides to being, because, you know, back in the day, I don't think people would be aware of the fact that, for instance, they would weigh you girls as flight attendants, as stewardesses, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. According to your height, I'm 5'7", you were allowed a certain weight. And if you would get close to it, they would give you a warning. If you get over it, you were offline without pay. So that was a drawback. So, of course, you watch what you eat. And even if it's a pound over, you had to go off and then be weighed again till you come down again. And so that made us all look slim, trim, and just beautiful. You know, I mean, nowadays when you look at the flight attendants, I don't even want to tell what I see. You know it yourself.
So. You also had to wear the same color nail polish as well?
Yes. A light sort of red. We all had to wear, not long nails like you see nowadays. The nails had to be nicely trimmed, not short. I mean, just nicely trimmed, the same nail polish. Even our hair had to be a certain length, not longer than shoulder, and had to be styled prettily. It could be shorter, as long as it looked beautiful, and hold your cap down. You know, the heads look nice, with little combs on them. We would put them down. And the other thing, which you wouldn't see nowadays, there were not these jetways. You had to walk over the tarmac, and because it was windy, your head could blow away. So in the summertime, we had white scarves, you know, like silk scarves, very lightweight, to tie it over your head to keep it down. And in the wintertime, we had black scarves. So then the same with gloves. In the summer, we had to wear white gloves, and in the winter, black gloves. So we always looked elegant, no matter how you looked at it. And I felt good. It made me real, I guess, maybe being German. Also, you follow rules and so on, and that's, I did.
There is also something to be said about the style in which passengers also traveled. That's also something that's gone by the wayside, hasn't it?
Oh, well, I think passengers are more demanding. They have more luggage to log on, but there was not that much then, and we girls had to help them put it in the overhead or under the seat. But it was not as complicated as nowadays. Nowadays, they carry on tons of weight, and some of the girls, of course, we cannot lift it, and so you always have to find someone to help you. And I think that's a great disadvantage. Mm.
There must have been a great camaraderie amongst you and the crew, because I understand not only were you flying together, but in some cases, stewardesses got apartments together, right?
Yes, we did. And since pay was not really that high, so especially in the beginning, like for instance, when we came to New York, I mean, once you graduate, you're on your own. You have to find your, and once you find your base, then you're on your own. You have to find your own way to live. They don't care what, where, when, if you can afford it or not, you're on your own. So when I came in New York, where do you go, right? They put us on a plane, and that's it. So we found two girls. We found, through a friend, an apartment in Manhattan, and called her desperately from the airport in New York, not knowing where to go, and they could accommodate us for the time being, and there were the one-bedroom apartment, and there were already three girls. So they put the two of us in as well. But it was set up in such a way to not be surprised when it happens, because one bedroom, there was two girls slept in there, one slept on a couch in the living room, and then they were in a, like an alcove. There were two, what do you call it?
Cots?
Like bunks or something that was not very comfortable, but that's where we slept for the time being. At least I was, we were happy to have a roof over our head, because we had to be somewhere. The next day we had a flight, you know. So it comes and goes. There's no time in between. When you get to fly, you got to fly. Especially in the beginning, you cannot have any choices. And so we had a place to sleep, a place to put our uniform and our little clothing we had, and start creating a life.
How long
so
were you?
There was no problem.
How long were you? How long were you a stewardess?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. And is that, you know, amongst your girlfriends, amongst the coworkers, is that considered a short period of time? Is that considered an average period of time?
No, this is pretty much a short. And why only that short? Because when I was here, I met my husband, got married, and you cannot be married, okay? Or then you can't have a child, or you cannot even be pregnant. And if this happens, you were out. The moment you would tell them, you are out. It's just like you're disposable, okay? There was no saying, okay, maybe another week. Or what. No, the moment you had to sign that paper, you're gone. Forget it. And I will never forget, I was so devastated sitting in the carry bus going back to the city. I felt really kicked out, and it was the first time that ever happened to me that somebody treated me so brutal.
Wow.
And, you know, it's what do you do? That's how life was.
As I mentioned,
now they would sue them. They would sue a TWA.
Yeah. As I mentioned in the introduction, you've written a book called America, the Beautiful Eyes, Through the Eyes of an Immigrant. There are many people who come to the United States who have an immigrant story and an experience. Is yours different because you were a stewardess? And by that I mean you got to travel back and forth. You got to experience different cultures, not only where you went, but also where you worked. On the flight, you got to experience different cultures. Does that change your experience as an immigrant living in the United States?
Well, I don't think we had that many really immigrants flying. I think the immigration wasn't as is now. People came from Europe or other countries, wherever. They came to already were educated to do a job, and either a professional job or come to study. I mean, it was organized. There were not just people coming in, unfortunately, as we have nowadays, in demanding and wanting to do something for me. The people who came, they were really, really educated. They brought the skill. They brought, you know, life. And no, I don't recall ever on the plane seeing what you see nowadays, which was very, very interesting. But we never thought about it because that's what we had, and these were the people. Some spoke different languages, which was fine. So being on the international run, you had to have some kind of language skill. And that took us over, and we were all happy doing it. You know, that's what we've chosen it. And people didn't like it. They could always do something else. That's what the motto, not just saying, oh, my God, I complain, I don't like it. No, do something else. And it was really enforced.
It certainly was a different time. It's been a pleasure talking to you about your experiences working as a stewardess. I mentioned your book, America the Beautiful, Through the Eyes of an Immigrant, is a book that is upcoming. And you had a previous book entitled Home?
Where is Home?
Where is Home? It was your previous book. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is annerosv.com. That's annerosv.com. Anna Rose, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks. And I also can go to an Amazon. So.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Pete. I appreciate it. You take care.
And Eros Valenci, author of the upcoming book, America the Beautiful Through the Eyes of an Immigrant. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0363, and you'll find links to her site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dirico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The parents of a 2-year-old boy who died after being dragged by an alligator into a lake at Disney World recently announced that they won't file a lawsuit over the tragedy. Their decision has shocked legal experts and many other Americans who have come to expect a lawsuit whenever a tragic event like this occurs. The parents, however, say that they will instead keep the spirit of their son Lane alive by creating a foundation in his name. In a statement, they said that the foundation will allow them to, and I quote, share with others the unimaginable love Lane etched in our hearts, end of quote. Let's be fair. Legal experts will continue to debate whether the parents should have sued. They'll argue that the posted warnings against swimming there should have been stronger, even though there hasn't been an alligator attack at Disney in 30 years. But the parents' decision does something else. It allows the healing process to begin earlier, and that's something that no amount of money could ever buy. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about a contest being put on by the pharmaceutical company Astellas. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I've got a couple more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A resident brought a sad find to the Guernsey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, a dead cat. Your heart sinks, as it is never an easy moment when you aren't able to help an animal, said manager Steve Byrne. Once they washed the mud off the body, however, it turned out to be something quite different. A dog puppet. Byrne says it's far from the first such weird find turned into the shelter on Guernsey, which is an island protectorate of the British Crown. He provided a few examples. A sick seal and dead dog both turned out to be duvets. An injured crow was actually a black bag. A stray pug was actually a frog. An injured bird was a blonde wig. And a hedgehog rescue was actually a pine cone. Further, he notes, reported birds of prey often turned out to be pigeons. Ironically, the Guernsey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has yet to receive a cow. And speaking of cows, a conservation biologist at Australia's University of New South Wales said in July that his team was headed to Botswana to paint eyeballs on cows' rear ends. It's a solution to the problem of farmers who were now forced to kill endangered lions to keep them away from their cows. However, the researchers hypothesize since lions hunt by stealth and tend to pass up kills if the prey spots them, painting on eyeballs might trick the lions to choose other prey. For the same reason, woodcutters in India wear masks painted with faces backward to protect against tigers. Wouldn't you think that the tigers and the lions would eventually notice that the eyes aren't blinking? Yeah, anyway. It seems to be that the butt of cows kind of makes lions the butt of the joke, doesn't it? Yeah, anyway. Let's get to our next guest on the program, shall we? Astellas is a pharmaceutical company. They've launched the C3 Prize, which is a challenge designed to inspire non-medicine innovations that improve the cancer care experience for patients and caregivers. Michelle Rialli is from Astellas, and she joins us from Toronto to talk about it. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. This is a very interesting concept, the C3 Prize. Tell us about it. It's sort of like a takeoff on shows like Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Estelis, what we're looking for are Canadians, and actually, you know, we're looking from entries globally, to participate in a challenge which will help make the lives of cancer patients a little bit easier. So we're looking at innovative and creative ideas from people, you know, to help those suffering from cancer.
And what kinds of things are you looking for? Have you done this in the past? Is this something that has some precedence to it?
No, this is our first time doing it. So we definitely have a passion for oncology, as it's one of our therapeutic areas. And at Estelis Oncology, the patient is really at the center of what we do. And we're passionate about discovering new ways to support people who are impacted by cancer.
This prize
is really an extension of our commitment to, you know, supporting cancer care for patients and their loved ones. And it's another way that we can, you know, address the unique needs of patients living with cancer and help reduce the burden of cancer.
Getting the word out and also helping people with cancer are two very important things. I'm sure you know, many companies and many hospitals go through various ways of trying to do just that. How did you guys come up with this particular idea, the C3 Prize?
You know, it was an innovative way that we can inspire non-medicine and non-treatment to help patients and their loved ones. So we were looking at different ideas, things that are really targeted at innovation and novel therapeutic areas. So we were looking at, you know, it's something that's like an innovative tool or a process that can help patients living with cancer. We're looking at maybe an adherence tool or something related to survivorship. We want people who are submitting to let us know what they think the biggest problem in cancer care is and what their solution to addressing the issue is and what the impact their solution can have on the cancer community.
The thing that sounds great about this contest is the fact that I would assume for the most part people who will participate in it are those who are touched in some way, shape, or form, either personally in their own case or with their own family and loved ones, by cancer and have had to deal with this in some way and have probably thought to themselves, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And this sounds like a way that can be like a community coming together to give ideas to others who are going through similar situations.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. We're looking at people who are passionate, you know, in the area of cancer and really have been touched by it in some way. In fact, one of the judges who will be at Stanford Medicine X on September 17th, you know, one of the judges is Robert Hershevik from Shark Tank, and he has a very personal connection to it as well because his mother recently passed away from ovarian cancer. So when he was approached with being one of the judges for this prize, he was definitely on board because anybody who has, you know, gone through the experience of seeing someone they love or care about suffer from cancer, as you know, is really passionate about it and wants to do anything they can to help and support programs like these, which are dedicated to coming up with new innovative ideas to help support patients and those suffering from cancer.
Okay, so since it is a prize, let's go through what has to be done in order to take part. First of all, I understand C3 prize submissions have to be made by August the 8th, right?
Yes, the deadline is August 8th, so if anybody's interested, I encourage them to go and submit their application as soon as possible, and they can do that by applying online at www.c3prize.com. And the website has so much information about the program and what type of you know, information that we're looking for, and it has all the details available online through the portal. It has updates and challenges and submission guidelines, all the information that they could need.
And we should mention that website again. That's C3 Prize, and it's C, the letter C, numerical 3, prize.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So what do they have, those who enter, what do they have the opportunity to win?
So the five finalists will be invited to pitch their ideas at no cost in front of a panel of judges at Stanford Medicine Next Conference on September 17th in Stanford, California. And three winners will receive a total of $100,000 in grants, as well as a one-year membership to Matter, which is a Chicago-based healthcare technology company and community hub. So also, Astellas will help support the winners in getting their ideas to fruition and bringing them to life.
Now, I mentioned this is all being done in part by Astellas. So tell us a little bit about Astellas Pharma.
So Astellas Pharma is a global pharmaceutical company, and one of our therapeutic areas is in oncology, where we focus on discovering and developing treatments to address the unmet needs of patients living with cancer who are facing one of life's most challenging health issues. Our current in-line therapeutic area includes prostate cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, and pancreatic cancer. So we, together with our partners, we develop and market cancer therapies, and we're working on discovering new ways and new pathways to care as well.
Now, when all is said and done, and you have the winners, which will take place, I guess, as you say, September 17th at the Stanford Medicine X Conference, when all is said and done, will the information be shared? Will it be up on the website? Because, again, like, and even the runners-up for that matter, because there might be some really good ideas that could be helpful to others, even amongst those who do not win.
Right. So on September 17th, that's where the five finalists will pitch their ideas. The winners will be announced at an ESMO conference in Copenhagen in October, actually.
Okay.
So the grand prize winner won't be announced till October, but in September, that's where the finalists will be invited to pitch their ideas. And absolutely, I'm not sure what the plans are in terms of communicating what the ideas were, but I'm sure that there will be some type of availability in terms of the really innovative ideas that did come forth through the conference.
And again,
sharing some of those ideas.
And again, if people want to get involved, they can go and submit on the website, c3prize.com. And of course, they can look at the website for all the information as to what you guys are looking for in terms of submissions, correct?
Absolutely.
Michelle, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It sounds like a very interesting and innovative idea.
Thank you, and I really encourage everyone to get their submissions in by the deadline of August 8th.
And that's August 8th by midnight Central Time.
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
Michelle Reale from Astellas. Again, you can find out more info about the challenge by going to their website, c3prize.com. That's c3prize.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0363, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
And sadly, because of social media, idiots are easier to find. Here's the latest case. A suburban Detroit motorcyclist was apparently fast enough to leave police in the dust during a chase, but not swift enough to stop from bragging about it on Facebook. Lake Orion police said 33-year-old Michael Brown of Rochester Hills turned himself in on Tuesday, 3 weeks after the incident. He's charged with fleeing police and reckless driving. Police say an officer pulled up to Brown outside a restaurant after seeing loud motorcycle maneuvers in the street. Brown sped off, and the officer eventually stopped pursuing him. Police say Brown boasted on Facebook that he was going 140 miles an hour in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. He added, hashtag no jail this weekend. Someone shared the post with police. Yeah. Do I have to say it? Okay, I will. Why? Oh, why do people feel the need to brag about their law-breaking on social media after they've gotten away from authorities? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid. But even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0363. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0363. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. John's Bay, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.